It's that time of year where a number of you are probably still making and maybe even still fulfilling certain New Year's resolutions or goals or aspirations, dreams that you have. And as I began studying this text over the last few weeks, I was thinking, you know, if God immediately granted all of your resolutions, your goals for this year, who would benefit? It's very natural to look at our lives and to identify a weakness or something that we would like to see changed and say, you know, whether it's physical health or spiritual health or reading more or having more conversations or less TV or less technology, or we do these things where it is very, and it can be selfish, where if God said, okay, I've heard your request, I've seen your goals, these are even good goals, you get what you want, who all would benefit from those resolutions? I want to read this morning a short story that Jesus tells in Matthew 25 about some goals that he had for his disciples as he prepared to go away. So beginning in verse 14, Jesus says, "For it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted them to his property." Now, I'm going to just pause there for a second, because that's a very awkward place to start, because I'm jumping into the middle of a context. So when it says, "For it will be like a man going on a journey," you're like, it will be like, well, I mean, what is it? It will be like. Well, in context, in this whole section, Jesus is giving a series of parables, a series of stories about the importance of watching and waiting and being vigilant for his own second coming. And he still has yet to die on a cross and be risen from the dead and return to heaven, but he's already looking forward to a day when he says the Son of Man will return in power and glory to judge the earth in righteousness. And he's saying, how are you going to live? How are you going to work in light of that good news, what's supposed to be good news, that, hey, I'm coming again for you? So as we jump in here and he says, it will be like, he's saying, the second coming of Christ and the importance of how you choose to live in the meantime is like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted to them his property. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then he went away. He who had received the 5 talents went at once and traded with them, and he made 5 talents more. So also he who had 2 talents made 2 talents more. But he who had received the 1 talent went and dug in the ground and hid his master's money. Now after a long time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with them. And he who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 talents more, saying, Master, you delivered to me 5 talents. Here I have made 5 talents more. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. And he also had the 2 talents came forward, saying, Master, you delivered to me 2 talents. Here I have made 2 talents more. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. He also who had received the 1 talent came forward saying, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here, you have what's yours. But his master answered him, You wicked and slothful servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I scattered no seed? Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and at my coming I should have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to the one who has 10 talents. For to everyone who has will more be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the worthless servant into the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. This is the word of the Lord. So as we embark on a new year with new opportunities, what I see here Jesus saying, kind of 4 big points, he's going to talk about identity, opportunity, mission, and reward. Okay, so identity. And I want you to notice that as Jesus begins this new story, verse 14, he actually begins with identity. He begins by telling his disciples, this is who you are. Even before I tell you what to do, I'm going to tell you who you are. Why? Because what you do flows out of who you are. And in religion, there can be an extreme overemphasis on what you do and what you don't do versus this is who God says you are. And if we ground our doing in our identity and allow God to fashion the essence of our identity, then those doings just naturally flow out of who God says we are. So let's notice what he says. He says, we are servants and we are stewards. Those are both in the very first verse of the story. So servants, what does that mean? It means we're not the master. We are not free to live however we want. We are not just out there on our own, possessing our things, doing our things, and just answering to no one. What he's saying at the outset is your core identity as a follower of me is one who is submitted to my lordship and to my leadership. And today in, 2020, it's America. We're Coloradans. And we bristle at this idea of God calls us servants. And we look at servanthood negatively. Because what do we think about? I mean, maybe we think about the Civil War. We think about servitude. We think about someone who's domineering, someone who's enslaving. And we conjure up very negative images of servanthood. We have very negative images of servanthood because most of you, like me, like to be in control. You don't want to think of yourself basically as someone who does someone else's will. You want to think of yourself as someone with freedom and autonomy and independence, and I do what I want to do with my time, with my money, with my resources, with all these things, okay? And I just want to say two things about that knee-jerk reaction of, whoa, servants, that's a negative. The first observation is that autonomy is an illusion. Our culture is striving for freedom and autonomy, independence. I do what I want to do, when I want to do it. Nobody tells me what to do. Well, that's, as you probably know, in moments of coherent thought, that is an illusion. Like, no one actually lives that way. Even those who identify themselves by their autonomy and by their freedom are controlled by, or we could say they are mastered by, a number of different things. For example, if you love money, Jesus says you're controlled by money. If you love pleasure, you are controlled by pleasure. If you love your work to the point that it is a source of your identity and you're a workaholic, you are controlled by workaholism. You may be, some of you, controlled by physical or psychological appetites or wanderings or cravings or desires. If you're a people pleaser, you are literally controlled by every other person whose opinion you value. So the point is, you are not the lord of your own life. You are not the master of your own fate. Servanthood is a reality for every single person. We simply choose who are we willing to let be our master? Who are we willing to let say to us, you should prioritize these things instead of these things? Which leads me to my second point or second observation about this, and that is that the dignity or disgrace of servanthood is related or depends entirely upon the one you serve. Extreme example, if you are a servant of illicit drugs and they do certain things to your body and they do certain things to your mind, and like people that we may pass on the sidewalk, they cause you to shake and vomit and pass out, you could pass that and see that and say, what a disgusting, shameful, vindictive master. And you'd be right. And that person would bear shame and disgrace and powerlessness because of the nature of the Lord that they've given their life over to. But they need it and they go back to it, even knowing this is harmful for me, but I'm going back and I'm letting you dictate my will. Okay, that's tragic. But if we are servants of the Most High God, if we are servants of the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, that is not shameful. It's the highest honor imaginable. So all Jesus is saying here at the outset is he's saying, I want you to conceive of yourselves as servants, just meaning you yield your will, your hopes, your dreams, your everything. You yield it to me and ask me, Lord, what would you have me to do with these things? That's the word servants. The word stewards is simply the idea that we are not independent owners. We are not ultimate owners of anything. because nothing originated from us. We are simply, and the word means like an overseer or a guardian of something that has been entrusted to us for a time. Now, if you kind of push back against that, I want you to think a very humbling thought for a moment. That is, if you were born into another family, in another generation, basically anywhere else in the world, you would not enjoy nearly the freedoms and the opportunities and the pleasures that you enjoy. And I mean, the lowest, the poorest in our church has significantly more than almost any other generation, any family, in any place, at any time. Okay? And who had control over that? God is the only one who chose to put you where he put you. Or how about this? If I tried to work out like Arnold Schwarzenegger, it would not go well for me. Okay? And even if I could, I would never end up looking anything like him because my DNA is very different and it responds very differently to exercise. But my DNA is not like his. And I have in my DNA things like degenerative disc disease and sciatica. So I start lifting heavy things and my back gets angry and I just have to stop. Okay? Well, what's the difference between me and him? He didn't choose that any more than I chose that. God apportioned to each one different things in DNA. Or think about your gifts, your natural abilities. You know, some of you are incredible artists or musicians or just like leaders, or you can draw really well, or you can memorize things really well. And many of you, and I commend you, you have seen that these are natural abilities and you have developed them. You've taken classes, you've worked at it and honed a skill. But you know, there are other people out there that could spend 10 times, 25 times, 100 times the amount of time that you've spent developing that skill, and they would never get to the level that you've gotten with those few things because God gave you a gift. God gave you an ability that just resonates with the way that he has designed you. Outside of that, just thinking of the life and literally the breath and the heartbeat and the brain waves, you have almost no control over those things. But God does. He gives you the power to provide for your family. Okay, so all of that means you're a steward. All of that means we are a temporary manager of all kinds of different things that God has said, here, I entrust you with this, I give this to you, but don't look at it as this is ultimately mine, all mine, but look at it as what a sweet gift from a God who loves me. Now, what can I do with this? If I were to summarize what I just said, what Jesus is saying starting this story is he's saying, as a servant, as a steward, your responsibility and your resources are both gifts from me. They both come from me. You know, kind of your job description comes from me, but the resources to do that job description also come from me. So now let's go, okay? So I want to talk about this. What is that responsibility? What is that resource then that God has given us? I want you to notice at the outset of the story, the master gives his own money to these three different servants, who illustrate three kind of ways of responding to the stewardship that God has given us. And it says, one receives 5 talents, one receives 2 talents, and one receives 1. And Jesus says, each according to his ability, or it's a word for like capacity. And you know this, you may look at people on either side of you and say, I don't know how she does so much with her life. Like, what a massive overachiever. Because I could never juggle all that. And you probably couldn't. And then we have a tendency to look at people that are kind of beneath us and be like, are you going to do anything with your life? Like, are you good at anything? And we think of people that have significantly smaller capacities or abilities than we have. And then we just kind of, probably most of us view ourselves as in the middle, because that's fashionable to do. Like, I know there's some people above me, a lot of people below me, some people around me. I'm just kind of in the middle. But he's given to each according to their capacity, their God-designed capacity. In the parallel story, which is Luke 19, the master explicitly tells them, engage in business until I return. Okay, so this is what I call point 2, the opportunity. This parable is probably extremely familiar to many of you. You're like, oh yeah, I've heard the parable of the talents ever since I was in Sunday school as a kid. Good. Do you understand the opportunity that the master has just given to every single servant? And you all are servants of God. So I'm going to put it in a way that you maybe haven't heard before so that you hear it again for the first time. The opportunity is this. Jesus is saying, go play with house money. Do you know that expression? Okay, it comes from gambling. I don't gamble, and I'm not encouraging you to gamble. But I know what playing with house money means. Let me give you a little illustration that's maybe less offensive than like the casino scene and the smoke and all that stuff, okay? Like some of you have watched game shows where someone seemingly is randomly selected out of the audience and then they're like in the chair with the host of the show and they start answering questions or something like that. So I'll just go with the one with like Regis and you're answering questions and I can't remember what it's called, but you're sitting there and you're answering questions and they give you this multiple choice and you get it right and they're like, congratulations, you've won $1,000. Would you like to keep going? Oh, yes, of course, I've won $1,000. Let's keep going. Okay, this is the $5,000 question, the $10,000 question, the $15,000, the $25,000. And now it reaches a certain point where they're like, man, I've made some decent money for a day's work, you know, just showing up to a random TV show, getting selected out of the audience. And now, you know, this host is telling me, you can either stay at $25,000 and not answer the next question, or you can try to answer the next question for $100,000. You know, and they're weighing that out, and then they're like, and now here's the $1 million question, and the host is like, and I'll warn you, if you get this wrong, you will go from $100,000 back to $25,000. But if you get it right, you will go home with $1 million. And the person's like, oh, what do I do? And you often even see them and hear them talking it out live, well, not live, but in front of you, where they're like, well, I came in here with nothing, so $25,000 is a lot more than nothing. But $1 million is a lot more than $25,000, and none of it was mine to begin with, so I'm going to go for $1 million. That's playing with house money. Because what is really the risk? If you answer the question wrong and you go home with $25,000, they realize, well, that's $25,000 that I didn't have, so it's worth the effort to go for this much, much bigger number. Just to apply this to you, do you hear in Jesus' parable him saying this to you? Like, you came in here with nothing. And basically at the end of life, you can't take anything with you. But in between, I've given you this massive gift. And I've said, now go play with house money. Go do something with this for me. And really, ultimately, we find out for your own benefit. But I think the problem is we view our gifts and our abilities and certainly our expendable resources like time and money. We think that's my money. That's my time. And if I give a portion to the church, or if I'm generous with this person in my small group or this other need that I see, or give of my time in that way, now I don't have it anymore. And I've worked really hard to get to where I'm at today. Which is why I led off with you probably have worked really hard to get where you are today. Good for you. I mean that. Good for you. But if you had been born anywhere else at any other time in any other country, you would have worked harder for nothing. Okay? So God has given you this massive go play with house money kind of gift. Okay? What if you really saw yourself as a steward? What if you really saw and believed what Jesus says here, that in the end, because we read the end of the parable, right? He's like, at the end of the parable, what happens? If you've been faithful at all to follow Christ, in the end, you get Christ plus everything. Okay? So I need to go back and add that to my illustration of the game show. What if the host says, hey, I see you're weighing out. Like, do I stay at 100,000 or do I risk going up to 1 million but back down to 25,000? And he's like, oh, and by the way, whatever happens here on this show, when you leave here and go home, you will have everything. Well, I think in that case, all of you would be like, well, if I drive back home or fly back home and I have everything, like everything? Yes, everything. Okay, well, then I think I'm going to go for the 1 million. I mean, wouldn't it change the way you lived your life here and now? If every follower of Jesus lived as if the opportunity before them was, I get to play with house money, I can't really lose. Now, what's the mission then? Like, if I'm playing with house money and that's just a way to get you to think about what the opportunity is, but then what's the mission? If I am playing with house money, what's the point? What am I supposed to be doing? What's the objective? What's the goal? Well, notice in verse 16, this first guy that's described is basically a capitalist. And what I mean by that is he takes the money that the master gives him. He goes out and it says he traded or he conducted business with it and he made a bunch more money. I mean, 100% return on your investment is a good job for however long he's taken to do that, okay? So he's done business. And when the master comes back and he sees, like, wow, you've made a lot more money, notice the master doesn't condemn him for that. He commends him. He says, well done. That was the point. And by the way, I think with these first two guys, the one that had five and he went out and did business and he made five more, and the other had two and he went out and did business and made two more, I think Jesus is intentionally vague. Because you may be like, well, what exactly did he do? Like, did he invest that? Did he start his own? Was he an entrepreneur? You know, what did he do? Well, Jesus doesn't tell you, because Jesus is just leaving it wide open for you with just a general principle. Leverage God's gifts to you. Leverage God's gifts to you. How? How exactly am I supposed to do that? He doesn't say, because that could be a certain kind of investment. It could be an entrepreneurship. It could be taking a risk. It could be working hard for the master. It could be any number of things that would be a faithful disposal of the master's money or a faithful investment of the master's money. I just hear Jesus saying something as simple as this. I'm letting you play with house money. Do something instead of nothing. Do something. Now, I'll use other parts of Scripture that I'll pull in here just very briefly and say, well, what's something? And again, I think God is intentionally broad. Like when they ask Jesus, hey, what's the greatest command? He's like, love God and love others. You know, and if you walk through life and you simply loved God and loved others, the New Testament says, then you would be perfect. Like if you always loved God and you always loved other people perfectly, you would be a perfect person. So number one, this mission, just getting a little bit more specific, leverage your gifts and abilities and resources to glorify God. In 1 Corinthians 10:31, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do everything for the glory of God. You know, you can think about, and I know some of you are just getting back from Christmas break, holiday break, but getting back to work, getting back into school. Just kind of the daily routine, the daily grind for some of you is, how is your vocation? How is your schooling where you're like, I'm doing this not ultimately for me, but ultimately this is for the glory of God. In other words, I want to draw attention to God. I want other people to see him and understand him and praise him with me, with us, because of the way I'm living my life. I want to draw attention to God so people stop ignoring him. See, when we glorify God, we're not making him something that he's not. We're not improving on his character or something or telling a better story, but we're just disseminating that story. We're broadcasting that seed and saying, this needs to grow in other places that it hasn't been planted yet. So I want to make God famous. I want my life to be lived so that other people know him and praise him with me. So leverage your gifts and abilities and resources to glorify God. Number two, leverage your gifts, abilities, resources to seek the common good. To not just be like, well, how can I leverage this stuff to make much of me so that people think I'm awesome? But you know, in context, in the very next story that Jesus tells in Matthew 25, and this may be familiar as well, where he basically says the Son of Man returns and he's going to make basically these two categories of people. Some he puts on his right, some he puts on his left. One group he calls the sheep and one group he calls the goats, because he's the shepherd and a shepherd is a shepherd of sheep. So he's recognizing there's an essential character and faith difference between these two groups of people. And what's interesting is when he comes to judge these people, there's a litmus test that he applies. And it's probably not the one that we would think of as Christians. So he says it like this. He says to the one group, he says, I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. And he says, that group is honestly like, what? Like, we would have done that had we seen you, Jesus, God, Master, in any of the circumstances. But when did we see you like that? When did we ever do any of those things for you, Jesus? And he says, when you did it to one of the least of my brothers or sisters, you did it to me. You see, his point is, as I've given you house money to play with your life? How are you using it to make God famous? How are you using it to say, there's a person that's sick, there's a person that's in need, there's a person that's lonely, there's a person that can't get by right now and needs a little bit more community in their life, a little bit more encouragement, and the church ought to be famous for that way of using the resources that God has entrusted to us. Unfortunately, our tendency is, hey, my gifts and abilities, resources, they're mine and they're about me. And if I can get more freedom, more recognition, more pleasure, more relaxation, more entertainment, more of that kind of stuff, then I'm all in. But why would I give a percent to you or to her or to him or to them? It just feels wasted. But this is kind of the heart of gospel Christianity, is that if I understand everything that I've received is grace, everything I have is a gift from God who loves me and owes me nothing. And he says, I've given this to you. Now, take what I gave you. And for this one brief life that you have on planet Earth, take what I've given you and leverage it for the sake of the kingdom. And if I could totally, you know, brag on my wife, I mean, I think this is what Asterisk and all of the rest of her life is about. I can die with this money in the bank, or I can leverage it to try to put a church there, to try to proclaim the gospel there, to build relationships there, to shine a light in a very dark place and just make Jesus famous and reach out to the lowest of the low and the poorest of the poor and bring them into our community and say, you are welcome here because you need the same grace that I need. Okay, I mean, what else are you going to do with your life? This is what Jesus says. This is what your life is all about. Is taking those gifts and abilities and resources and using them for others in our vocation, in our church, in our neighborhoods, in our kids' schools, and so on. Let me end with this, the reward. There is a reward. And I think it's important to Jesus that he tells this, because every way that he tells this story in the different gospels, he always lands on this. Okay, what's the outcome of the story? And I'll begin with the negative. You notice that Jesus actually has this one servant that he calls a servant. Like, you've been given the same opportunities as others. Now, you had less capacity, but I don't think that's the point of the story. It's not like those with less capacity are just going to drop off. The point is, you were given the same opportunity as these other servants, and what did you do with it? Well, the servant says, well, you know, you're kind of an angry man. You reap where you don't sow, which means you're taking from other people. First of all, this guy doesn't understand the master, does he? Because the master will even come back and say, if you really believe that about me, if you really believe that, then you should have at least done this. But you didn't even do that. So you don't understand the master. And basically, it's just all about you. Like, how do I cover my tail? How do I protect my interests in this? And that's how, frankly, a lot of us are living. We take these gifts and abilities and resources from God, and it's like, what can I do with this? That can, you know, kind of play it safe. And then I'll give it back to God later, like when he comes back, and I'll give it back to him. It'll be his ultimately. Yesterday, I'm working out in our basement, and we're clicking around, and the boys always, when they're like playing around me when I'm working out, they hijack whatever sports thing I want to watch. But thankfully, we agreed on the same thing, which was the X Games in Norway. I don't know if anybody saw this, but like in the middle of like a harbor town, they built this massive steel structure that was basically like a mountain. And these snowboarders and skiers were coming down, and then they'd go off this jump and do all these twirls in midair and land. Okay, so they thought that was super cool to watch. What I noticed there that just kind of like jumped out at me as I'm studying and preparing and thinking about this is they have these different skiers, and there's three rounds, and they basically aggregate your scores. And so after two rounds, you're like, oh, so-and-so's in sixth place. And the only way that they jump into a medal contention is they've got to get a score of this or higher on this. And you look at each of them as they go, person after person after person. This person is sixth, this person is seventh, this person is fifth. And I think what we do in that situation is we're like, you know, I'm not going to meddle anyway, so I'll just play it safe, look cool, you know, land my favorite trick, whatever. But like person after person just went for something huge and insane and crashed and burned. And it's just, you know, it's a yard sale and there's stuff everywhere and you know, they get up and they're wiping snow off their face, which makes me feel better to see a professional having to do that as well. And what do you think the two announcers say? Are they like, ha ha, loser, like you should have... No, in every instance, the announcers are like, that was awesome. that this person just tried a quadruple such and so, and I don't know all the like grabs behind and in front and like all this like stuff that they do, but they're like, that person almost landed the very first 1080 blah 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 in competition ever. Like, what a gutsy. And I just see like the heart of Jesus like that. Like, hey, you know what? You with house money, you went for it. And yeah, that didn't go according to your plan. And you're not on the world's medal stand, but you're on mine. Because you didn't play it safe. You didn't bury it in the ground. You did something with what I gave you. You went for it. And I think that's positively what we need to hear now. Jesus turns to these two other servants and he says, look, you had five and you made five more. You had two and you made two more. It's interesting that the parallel account in Luke 19, the master gives 10 to each one and one makes 10, one makes five, and the other one is like, I'm going to play it safe. And so the point is not like, what's your ROI? You know, is it 100%? Is it 50%? Is it 10%? Like, how well did you do? It's just like they did something, and the master comes back and says, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of the master. So going all the way back to your main point four, what's the reward? I'm just taking the words of Jesus here. He's saying the reward is praise, promotion, and pleasure. Praise, the master saying, good job. Because even if you lost something in trying to be faithful with what I've entrusted to you, you went for it, you took risks, you lived for my glory, you lived for the good of other people around you, it wasn't selfish, way to go. Okay, that's the praise. The promotion, he says, you were faithful in a little, so I'm going to promote you. I'm going to set you over many, many other things forever. Promotion. And then pleasure, he says, enter into the joy of your master. And I think that's incredible because he doesn't even say enter into joy with your master. Like, your master's having a good time. He has lots of fun toys to play with. Enter into joy like you should be. He's like, enter into the joy of your master. Your master, Father, Son, and Spirit, that are endless joy, infinitely, you know, in that dance of joy and love and grace forever. And he's like, your reward is you get to enter into that eternal, infinite pleasure of God. What an incredible reward, okay? Now, what I want you to notice is that pleasure and promotion are the reward of your mission. They are not your mission. And this is where we get it all turned around. Is we whether any of you thought of that expression before of playing with house money, no, we tend to hunker down like, oh, this is my money. I've worked hard for it. And how am I going to use it? Well, I'm going to seek promotion. Like, I'm going to try to get more people to know me and get a better reputation and, you know, have more relaxation, have more stuff that I can consume. And we make the goal of our mission pleasure and self-promotion. And it's like chasing the wind. Because even if you get it, it's never enough. You want more, you want more, you want more, you want more. And some of the wealthiest and seemingly happiest people or people with the happiest circumstances are some of the most discontent. But Jesus says, if you made your mission about leveraging what I've given you to seek my glory and to seek the good of other people, do you know where that lands? Do you know the outcome of your mission? Is that pleasure and that promotion and praise from the master. So I want to be careful that I'm not just sending you off with some kind of moralistic motivation to like do more for God. But I'll also be frank with you. When I grew up in upstate South Carolina, around a ton of fundamentalists, legalism was a big problem because people were working. I mean, every time the doors of the church were open, a ton of people were there serving. And some of them were doing it with the wrong motives, like very moralistic, legalistic, self-righteous, look at me, look at everything I do for God. As I've lived in Denver for 15 years, I'm not saying legalism isn't a problem, but I see a very different problem, and that is laziness. We are not a culture like South Carolina where everybody's out competing everybody else for how much can I do for God? How much can I be around church? We're more like, how little can I do with church and how much can I just kind of, you know, ski and hike and brunch and do other stuff? Either way, I don't want you to go out of here like just feeling guilty and like, oh, I should have been doing more with what God gives, okay? So let me show you how the gospel is key to everything that Jesus says here, and then I'm done. First of all, Let's go back to that identity piece where he calls you right out of the gate, servants of God. Do you understand what a grace gift that is? Where God would go to you as an alienated enemy of the cross and say, I'm not going to let you waste your life serving drugs and alcohol, serving your own reputation, serving money, serving people-pleasing, being controlled by others, all these other lords. I am calling you out of that. I'm rescuing you out of that, and I'm putting you in my household so that you serve as one whose master first served you. That itself is the gospel, that we could even be called servants of God. This is why Paul and the other apostles later, when they wrote their different letters to the different churches, they're just like, Paul, a servant of Jesus Christ. And it wasn't like, servant of Christ. Because he understood the difference of like serving the law and just getting beat up and bludgeoned by the law and the opportunity, the grace of serving Jesus Christ. I mean, some of you have gone through this where you're working for the man, right? And you see this other job opportunity, and you're like, I've watched that boss. I've watched that owner of that company and the culture that they create. I would love to go work for them. Well, Jesus is calling you out of kind of like a work and a slavery situation that's bondage and leads nowhere and saying, come work for me. That's grace. Number two, you've been given a priceless gift in that calling to come and serve Jesus Christ. Now, this is easy to miss, but the master gives each of his servants what? Talents. And we hear that and we're like, oh, talents, like abilities. No. A talent was a measure of gold in Jesus' day. And it was equivalent to 20 years' wages. Just say a year's wage is $50,000. Some of you make more than that, and some of you make way more than that, and some of you make less than that. But 50 is a round number. So what is 20 years' wages? It's $1 million. So the lowest guy got $1 million, this other guy gets $5 million, this other guy gets $10 million. And this is, by the way, the reason for the title of my sermon, How Will You Invest Your Million? Because you all have $1 million, at least, maybe five, maybe 10, maybe 100 million, something from God, where he's like, go play with house money. So God doesn't just call you under his family and then treat you the way that like American slave owners during the Civil War often treated their slaves, like beating them, abusing them, saying, you can't worship God. You can't sing your songs. You can't come to our church. This is a white church. This master is nothing like that. He's like, not only have I called you into my family, into my household, now I'm going to give you this extravagant gift and encourage you, go risk it because you have nothing to lose. That's incredible grace. Number three, you've been given incredible freedom and flexibility on how you love God and others. And I already pointed this out, but he doesn't give you a precise roadmap of like, I gave you $1 million, whatever. Now, take a right here, take a left here, go 3 miles, take a do this. He's just like, go love God and love other people. I mean, what an incredible freedom. Like, this is not a hyper-controlling, micromanager kind of God. He's just like, I've called you, I've rescued you from all that junk, and I've rescued you from the hell that's described at the end of this story. I've rescued you from that. I've given you this. Now here's this big idea. Go share this good news and make much of Jesus. Man, what an awesome opportunity. Finally, Jesus is coming again. And don't miss that point of the parable and the point of the context. The point of all these stories is the Son of Man is coming again, and he's coming with his rewards with him. And he's saying, enter the joy of your master and welcome home. And you don't have to perform like other people. I mean, one guy had 10, he made 10 more. One guy had 5, he made 5 more. One guy had 2, he made 2 more. One guy in the other parable had 10 and he made 5. I mean, just you don't have to look at and compare yourself in relation to others. Just go and live profligately, extravagantly, generously before God. So Here's your application. We're going to do this in our gospel community groups. So shameless plug, those start tonight. You should be in one. And I'm talking like you. You is the generic you, but it's also you. Okay. So if you're waiting for a message from God, this is your message from God. Not that I'm God. God told me to tell you that. Okay. We're going to do this in our gospel communities. But here's number one. Make a list. And I wouldn't take hours doing this, because most of these things will just occur to you right off the top of your head as soon as you start writing. But make a list of, here are some gifts. And what I mean by gifts are like natural or spiritual gifts, like hospitality or generosity or teaching or administration, like just things that I do for the church that come naturally to me because of the work of the Spirit in me, ways that I can serve the body of Christ. Abilities, which are the natural abilities, like I can sing or I can play an instrument or I'm a fast typist or I memorize stuff really well or I enjoy leading classes or, those kinds of things that you're like, hey, I don't mean to be proud, but I'm good at these things because God has entrusted me with an ability. And then resources, two obvious ones are time and money. And write it down, no matter how big or small that gift, ability, or resource seems to be. Number two, ask, looking at your list, say, how am I right now, how am I leveraging that for the glory of God? So money, because nobody wants to talk about money. How is my money, and I don't mean the 10% of the dollar that goes to the church, I mean the other 90%, how is all of that a leveraging for something that makes Jesus famous? And how am I using that to leverage it to seek the common good? And by the way, those are not two separate things. Those are like two sides of one coin. Thirdly, meditate and pray something like this. God, how do you want me to leverage these gifts and abilities and resources for your glory and for the good of others? Or I just put it this way. How can other people experience your love and your gospel through and because of me? Because the master said, that's what life is about. And you do this and you will have extreme joy. Whether you're poor, whether you're sacrificing, whether you're taking risks or not, this is where joy is found. So meditate and pray through that. God, here are some areas where I see weaknesses. Here are some areas where I'm pretty good at that. I want to do this with my whole life. What does that look like? And then number four, think of, and I added this, I think you have three. Number four, make it specific. So think of specific contexts, like my vocation. Because this is not just a plea for you to serve the church, okay? Again, 97% of your life is lived outside the church, and we need to be a church that equips you for that 97%. So in your neighborhoods, in those schools, in your vocation, at the gym, some of the restaurants that you frequent over and over again, I want you to think of specific context, think of specific people. And say, Lord, how could I leverage your gifts, your resources to me to make you famous to this person and to lift this person in the totality of what they need? Okay? And I just say, don't play it safe like the one. Play with house money, go have fun, take risks for the kingdom and see what God does with that. Let's pray.